Okay, Ron. Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for the prayer for the families of those that are here left behind and hope that they have salvation.
Amen.
And, you know, been going over things in the New Covenant and for a while. And I used to write a lot in my Bible, but now I write in my notes more than I do in my Bible. But, you know, these things sometimes really come up great for you when you're going back and looking at them a whole bunch of years later. And when I wrote these down, I didn't know how long I'd be here, and I still don't know, but I know this. These notes really come in handy sometimes as to how things is laid out here. And, of course, we've been dealing with John 5 for a little while, and we've talked about resurrection and judgment and resurrection and judgment again and resurrection again. And because the book of John lays it out this way, and I would have probably forgotten that had I not put these notes in my Bible, but it talks about judgment again in 29. And then, of course, John the Baptist witness. And then the Father's witness. And that's where we're going to start tonight, with the Father's witness. And we'll just start in John 35:37 and go from there. And did the little thing that we have in our fireman's deal in Christmas time, because we got all of the families there, and it's a good time to kind of touch base again with some of those, because you don't ever really know where they are and what they're doing in, according to Scripture. And you know, Luke is a good place to start, and it's really good to be able to point things out to them as we go along. Here in 37 is where we left off last week. But if you go back to 36, John says, "But John had written here, but I have greater witness than that of John, which is John the Baptist, for the works which the Father hath given me to finish, the same works hath given me to finish, the same works that I do bear witness of me that the Father has sent me." So, you know, we realize and we understand that John didn't last too awfully long once he got out of the wilderness and got to preaching and also to bear witness. And it says of John the Baptist, there was not many greater than he is as far as a witness of Christ goes. And we realize that what John was given to finish, I'm not sure that he really got it finished, but nevertheless, he got as far as he could before he got beheaded. And certainly, you know, it was a bad time right at then, because they were cousins, if you will. And as far as man is concerned, and so we get down to 37, and it says, "And the Father himself, which hath sent me, hath borne witness of me, and ye have neither heard his voice, at any time nor seen his shape. And so we realize from this that what is being said here, that God did speak in the earth and the heavens shook when he spoke, and these people had not seen this. They had not
never experienced that.
They just fell at. God didn't speak anymore in that way, but he did speak to his servants, like Moses and so on. So, so the neither nor is in verse 37, and that really kind of caught me again, because I hadn't seen it for quite some time. But it said, and the Father himself which hath sent me had borne witness of me, and ye have neither heard his voice at any time, nor neither nor seen his shape. So they did not live in the time period there where that was going on at that particular particular time that Jesus was talking to him about. And he says, and ye have not his word abiding in you, full stop. In 38. For whom he has sent him, ye believe not. So all these that were, have been mentioned here, and the pages that John had written, all of them bear witness, of course, to his son. And so, he says, in the notes that you do not, know God, for whom he has sent him, ye believe not. So the people that were sent, the Jews, didn't believe that this guy that come along and grew up there and had Mary for a mother and Joseph for a father, they thought, could not believe it, because they didn't really see it that way. And with the Jews, it was always a situation of seeing, hearing and seeing, but seeing more than hearing. And, because that was the way the Samaritan woman at the well, when she was talking with Jesus back there at the well while he was waiting on his disciples to come back, he told her everything that she had ever done, really, in her life, concerning, at least concerning men. And so she run back to town when the guys come back with the food for Jesus, and told them back in town, said, oh, this man told me everything I ever done.
Yeah.
And they couldn't believe that. They didn't believe it because they didn't hear it.
Yeah.
And so they said, well, we got to go see this fellow. And so they all either came out of town or Jesus went into town, or either way, they got to see him. And whenever they started talking to him, they realized the same thing that the Samaritan woman did. That, you know, he had things took down for Pat. And so, but he stayed with him for 2 days. And that wasn't 2,000 years either, but the time from him showing up on the earth until then was 2,000. Yeah. Okay. And, because it was 4,000 years with Christ. I mean, with the when they created Adam, and it was 4,000 years it took up the 4 days there that Peter spoke about, and in his recitation of this thing. But the 2 days here is, you know, you can look at it either way you want to look at it, but generally speaking, the 2 days can be the 1,000 years, or it can just be 2 days. And so that's kind of left up to the believer here, okay? And then in verse 39, it says, search the scriptures, for in them when you think you have eternal life, and then, and they are they which testify of me. So, if you search the scriptures and can have this discernment for the scriptures that you need to be, to see and to be, it says they are the those which testify of me, all the way back, you know, to the scriptures before we just read, and even all the way back to where he grew up and become at least 30 years old himself. So, I want to read the notes there on 39 where it says search. And the Greek there is E-U-N-O. It means to search as a lion or a hound that's tracking by scent. Not the same word as in Acts 17:11. So that was what I made where I got that 11:7. I had wondered where it's coming from, but here it says the verb may be the imperative or the indicative mood. But in the indicative mood, it never commences with a sentence without the pronoun or some other word. While the imperative is so used, it says C7, 52, 14, 11, where it is believe, or in 15:20, where it is remembered. The scriptures of the sacred writing here. And so that takes care of 39. And it says in 40, you will not come to me that you might have life. So he's still talking about searching the scriptures, because you need to have this understanding before it will become sometimes brought into your mind in the way that it was really meant to be brought into your life. Okay, and into your mind. So it says, they are these that testify me. And then verse 40, you'll not come to me. And you will not come to me that you might have life. Or you do not will to come to me if you don't understand. If you don't understand it, you don't have the will that it takes to receive salvation from the one that is salvation. Because you've not got rid of the sinfulness, and I think at that point, to where you can believe and understand that. It might have something to do with have life through his name. I'm not really sure about that part of it at that time. But he says in verse 41, I receive not honor from men. So he doesn't get his honor from men. His honor comes from those that know him. And it can be with the salvation situation. So, and that word there is doxa, means approval or praise from my Father. If it, you can't get that from the Word of God, and you can't understand that from, so it's probably pretty plain that you don't have, you don't have the ability to get salvation in that situation. Because all these things that he's put down here, it seems like, well, you know, it depends upon, and it relies upon. And so this is, I think this is the way it was meant to be. And so in 42 it says, but I know you, that you have not the love of God in you. So it doesn't take a lawyer to figure out that if you have what the Son of God has, he knows these things.
Yep.
And he's known these things from even back before he was brought down to a one cell being and put in the womb of Mary. He could, when he was a kid, a young kid, he could, very young, he could remember what he did with the Father all the time. Now, that's the only one I ever seen or heard tell of that could do that.
Yeah.
You know, generally, young children don't learn very much until they're a few years old, at least three or four or 5 years old. Yeah. But he says in 11:42, but I know you. So he knows you whether you know him or not. Whether you agree to meet his specifications of being known by him.
Yeah.
Let's go to 43. He says, I am come in my Father's name, and you receive me not. He says, what I'm telling you, I get it from my Father, and he gives me what to say. Basically, here, what we got going on. In 42, in 43, come in my Father's name and you receive me not, full stop. Well, if you got to stop and think about it a little bit, it may be there that it's not there in your mind yet. If another shall come in his own name, him you will receive. So, they are those that come and said, yes, I'm the Son of God, but Satan may put it in their mind that that's true to them, you know, because they've got to hear it, or at least they think they've got to hear it directly. And the note says, not in the way of love or belief. And this is part of the Father's mandate. That love toward God. Okay, and love toward God. And this is at 17:1. And 17:5 on page 23, if you got a companion Bible. Yep, 17. Let's go to 17. And and I may have changed my notes out a little bit, looking for other stuff. But here we go. What am I seeing? I'm going to page off. I love my old Bible because it's got all these, some of these things written down, but they're getting, kind of get threadbare here that some of these pages are a little bit. Okay, we're talking about 17:1 and 17:5. Let's see. I believe I'm right on that. Yeah. Read out 17:1 and 17:5. 17:1 says this. The genitive character. Here the emphasis is always on the adjective particle, which appears in the origin as a noun in the genitive case. And it gives the illustrations here, and I won't read them, but that is the genitive character. The genitive basically are 14 words, from, around, always, under, beside, upon, over, in, into, down, through, toward, with, and before. A whole list up. Now here's the fifth. In the genitive case. The genitive of relation. Okay? This is perhaps the most interesting of all. And the manner of expressing the particular relation must be gathered from the context. Frequently, the word of is equivalent to pertaining to. It may be objective, subjective, or both. Take 2 Corinthians 5:14, the love of Christ, which may be the love Christ bears to us, and that is subjective. And the love we bear to Christ is objective, or both may be true, and the truth, like Genesis 2:9, like the tree of life, i.e., or the tree which preserves life, Isaiah 55 and Acts 13, and the sure mercies of David is pertaining or made to David. Matthew 6, the lilies of the field, which grow in the field. Romans 8:36, sheep of slaughter, or the sheep destined for slaughter. And Hebrews 11:26, the reproach of Christ is the reproach for Christ's sake. So, all these you see are different, and the word of makes the difference in those. In those situations there in verse 32. Okay, the genitive of relation occurs in the gospel elsewhere only in Luke 11:12, that you have not the love of God in you, is what it says. Now, okay. Let's go back to 43. How can you believe which receives honor one of another and seek not the honor that cometh from God only? Now, this is 43. It says, I am come in my Father's name, and you receive me not. If another shall come in his own name, him ye will receive. And he said, how can you believe which receiveth honor one of another man. And it says to note the article here and not in the preceding verse, and seek not the honor that cometh from God only. Okay, and then we get down to verse 45. Do not think that I will accuse you to the Father. There is one that accuses you, even Moses, in whom you trust. So this is, he goes back now to Moses' testimony, 45. So it says, there is one that accuses you, even Moses, in whom you trust, or that you have set your hope to.
Because Moses gave him the law.
Yeah.
And the law had you always in accusation if you weren't following it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like just a running accuser, just waiting on you to step out of line.
Well, I heard somebody say either yesterday or today, when I was turning the TV or something, and it said, the Jews got the Ten Commandments. It said whenever they got done with them, there was 2170. So that's, you got to realize that God give you the Ten Commandments, and if you really got involved in them, if being a Jew, you could be all right. They said when they got done with them, they put so many in there, couldn't nobody believe.
Like the Lord accused Pharisees of making his word none effect by their traditions.
Absolutely.
They added so much to the...
And I never really considered how much they had added to it, but I heard the number. But
they added enough to it to get it out of
I believe it was 2,100 something, if that person was right.
Right.
Okay. And it says in verse 46, for hath ye believed Moses, then you would have believed me, full stop. So, Moses was a man chosen of God to do these things, and so they should not have had a problem with that. Had they believed what God had written in Scripture, they could have took care of that right there. He says, for he wrote of me. Well, you know, what greater need does one have as being, getting this from somebody that had been chosen from the God of the universe? My goodness. But this was the way they were. They couldn't really believe it. He says in verse 47, and this is the last verse in the book of John about this. He says, but if you believe not his writings, how shall you believe my words? That if you can't believe what God had given to the prophets concerning me, and to how I was to come, and what I was to be, and what I could do. If you couldn't believe that, then what are you going to believe? Because when they couldn't stand to hear the prophets anymore, they'd kill them all.
Yeah.
My goodness.
If you wouldn't tell them what they wanted to hear, you would win in jeopardy.
Oh, that was the gist behind this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It got to be something that they couldn't stand it, because they were getting told all the time about all these things that they were doing was not that needful. And God had already given them the word that they needed and sent the word in person. He cometh out of the womb of Mary and grew up and had his testimony. And just like when I had in my notes and went back to the impotent man at the well, at the pool, and when he told him to take up the bed and take up his bed and go home, would you have not done that if God had made you whole after 38 years, after you've been laying around over there waiting 38 years? The guy tells him, stand up, walk, get your bed, go. I surely could have come to the conclusion that, yeah, there's more here than I know, you know. But not then.
No. Everything else at that point would have paled in comparison to what just happened.
Yeah.
From the law.
So that was...
At least in the moment. You know.
Yeah, that was the situation for the time there at that time. Okay, I wanted to do a little more of this before I give up the book of John. So we'll go on a little bit in chapter 6. This is the fourth sign here in God's ministry, I think. But yeah, the fourth sign. And so this goes on. It kind of goes on. It says, after these things. So, here, the gears and the speed changes a little bit. It's still with Christ, but yet, it is the thing that comes up next. This is the fourth sign. And it's dealing with the feeding of the 5,000. And, so it says, after these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. Okay, this is, AD 27. It tells you that in the first verse of 6 there in the Companion Bible. So, it says after these things, this expression occurs 7 times in John's Gospel. After this, the word after there occurs 3 times. And after there in the Greek is meta, appendage 104, Roman numeral. I think it's 11 probably. XI. With the accusative, it means after, always in connection with time. When it's meted, it always deals with time. It could be before, when, or after, whatever, you know, in that situation. Also, it was John 5:1. And Jesus there is... The appendix 98X10 in the appendix. And that says, went away over the Sea of Galilee. So the going was a time period of him going from one place to the other, okay. And, or hear his law. I was having trouble with my pen at that time. Oh, and it's the genitive of relation, which is the sea of Tiberius. So not only was it of time, but also it is a genitive of relation equal to, which is the sea of Tiberius. Here is the rendering of Tiberius. The city is still in existence. It was not visited by the Lord, therefore not guilty of rejecting Christ. All the other cities which did reject him have perished from Israel. So, you know, when Christ was going from city to city and doing these things, if somebody told him, if some group told him to leave, or didn't want to listen to him, they were no longer in existence.
Yeah.
After a period of time, they were no longer
in existence.
Yeah. Verse 2 of Acts, John 6, said, and a great multitude followed him. I guess when he, after he went over the Sea of Galilee and was at Tiberias, and a great multitude followed him because they saw his miracles which he did on them that were diseased. So they could see the miracles and believe the disease. Now, that was something that could happen. So, a great multitude or a great crowd followed him or was following him because they saw or believed his miracles, which he did, or was doing, or working on there in the Greek is epi, on them that were diseased, because what he could do in healing was certainly miraculous, and I know God had give healing to some of the others in other places, but here we're talking about the Lord here. We're talking about God's Son.
Yeah.
And disease didn't hold a candle to what he could do. And so, you know, we remember him going to the demonic person next to the lake out there, and he's breaking chains and living in the tombs, and he overcome all this stuff, and these demonic beings that were in him said, what are you going to do with us? You come before the time, and he said, well, what do you want to do? And he said, well, we need to go into something. He said, what about these swine here? And so he said, okay. Because he knew for a fact that those swine could not swim. But they didn't understand that. Because, you know, if you've ever seen a hog collar somewhere, and a lot of times it runs down into water. And old Al Capone had two of them You remember down there when we went down there and went first, went hunting for, ducks. And Ronnie and Troy was, that's when we found the sitters down there and they wanted to bust one open and they bound that thing all up the woods there and never did break it open. Getting busted open. They're just, it looked like a watermelon, but they're so, they're hide on those things. They're so tough. They just, they'll take a beating and it's still normal. So that's the way that those things reproduce themselves because the animals, a lot of them can't get into the seeds or the seeds would get out and they probably wouldn't eat the seeds. So the seeds would get in the ground and probably come back up the next year. I don't know, but I know that was not for us that day down there. And here was these hog fathers out there. Well, Al Capone had lived there for a while. And if somebody would have brought somebody down to him from Chicago, where he originated from, they could have knocked him in the head, pulled him over in the hog parlor, and he was gone. I mean, the hogs would have eaten him. And one time when I was down there, they had the FBI down there cleaning out the well. Because later on, or about the time, I think Al had paid for the tap on the house that was on that property, which it was a log house too. And these guys were out there, and they'd been throwing the deer entrails and everything in the well after the city water come through. They didn't need it anymore. And so they just left an old windlass on it or something, and they was out there cleaning it out. Six of them were. And I went out there and I said, guys, is it? I said, I know Al Capone had this place. And he said, well, how did you know that? I said, well, I got ways to find it out, too. I said, this guy, and I turned around and told him, I said, this guy that married my mother-in-law because my father-in-law had passed away. And I said, he lived with Al Capone for a while and worked for him for a bunch of years. I said, he was working for Al Capone in 1920 when the stock market busted. And he had just put money in the bank, and I said, he wouldn't put the money in another bank to save your life.
Yeah, he kept all his in the
bank. I said, he kept it in his pocket or pockets of his clothes. And I said, he had enough money there to buy 90 Model T cars new. And they took it. He put it in there and the next day, and he said he knew that they thought they knew that the market was going to break. And he said, I didn't have the knowledge to know that at the time. And I said, okay, so do you believe what I'm saying? And they said, well, we ain't got no reason not to. And I said, well, have you found any human bones in that well? I said, no. I said, well, Al Capone left there right before they run the water line here. So you're not going to find it there. And he said, where would you look? And I said, well, how many of you six here, did y'all grow up in the country? Did you grow up in town? He thought there for a little bit and he said, no, none of us come from the farm. I said, well, why are you doing down here on the farm looking for some? You ain't got a clue. I turned around and walked off and he said, hey, I said, bye. Now, he never did come over around the house. I looked for him to come around the house. But he never did tell me his name either, so. There you go. That was a story about Al Capone. And, but Dad had went down there not knowing nothing about that part of the country. He got out of his truck. It was loaded with cars. He went into the bank and asked this man, do you have property that I could lease the hunt deer on? He said, you come to the right place.
Happened to be where we were.
And so we had that place to hunt for a while. But Al Capone had already, he'd already started going downhill at that time. But that was basically my story between what I knew about Al Capone. But my stepfather-in-law, he would get started on something that him and Al talked about, and then he'd just get so far and wouldn't tell me the rest of it. And that made me so angry. But I guess that's where that part of his life evolved from. Okay, verse 3. John 6:3. Jesus went up into a mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. Okay. This is kind of an informative verse. Jesus went up east into a mountain, and I'm not sure it told the mountain. I don't think it did. He said, oh, it was the mountain that overlooked the lake, or they call it a sea, but it was more like a lake. And and this is AD 28, so this was a year later than where John 6 started. And then we get down to verse 4. And, or now, 4. And the Passover. And the feast of the Jews was now. Okay. Oh, here we go. Here's what I was talking about a little earlier. Ronnie. And the Passover. The Passover, in the Greek is Pascha. Pascha. Appendix 94. 3:3. And it says this word known as Aramaic of three kinds. One kind is for those that lived around or in Jerusalem, and it was known as High German. Well, I didn't know that Aramaic was German, but evidently this is the notes that's in the Companion Bible. And two was the Samaritans. And the third was those that lived, Galatia is the same. The second, third one is known as Low German. And, or that the Jews were now, maybe not lived in Jerusalem, but lived elsewhere. And we went through the Samaritan and it wasn't mentioned there. And, but I never thought that the Germans were, well, I guess I knew that I had heard they had a a tongue of their own, but I'd never got involved with it to realize that other people had picked it up and used it for themselves.
It is kind of strange.
And theirs, but that's the reason I love to do this, because I learn a lot about the stuff that
I learn something every time
that I wouldn't know before. Okay, then we go to verse 5. And this is a question to Philip, one of the disciples, Philip. It says, when Jesus then, and it said then was the word therefore, lifted up his eyes. So evidently, Christ may have been napping or nodding off. And Jesus was wanting to know what was going on here. He lifted up his eyes and saw, or having seen, and having seen there in the Greek is theomai, page 133, Roman numeral 1, number 12. A great company, a great crowd is coming toward or unto him. And he saith unto Philip. So he lifted up his eyes and seen these people coming. A multitude of them. This is the big crowd coming. And I think he was over there to recuperate a little bit. And he asked Philip this, whence or where shall we buy bread or loaves that we with these may eat? And so I think this was a taste to Philip about what he would do if he was sitting there and he was with Christ and none of the rest of them were there. And he said, oh, look, here's a crowd coming. What are we going to do? Philip, what are we going to do? And he gives us a little more information in our notes there. And it says, now, Bethesda was a neighbor town, which Philip knew. So Christ knew that Philip should know that part of the country. And so he knew where, well, he knows everything. So he was just about that. But, verse 6 bears this out. It says, and this he said to prove him, full stop. So he was trying to making sure that Philip knew the place that they were in there. And he thought, well, he might be able to look up the one that had the pocket, the pouch for the money, and he'd get Philip involved in this. Is putting Philip to the test, for he himself knew what he, Philip, would do. So he understood already what Philip would do if if this was a test to test him. And Philip answered him and said, 200 pennyworths. Because he had asked him, he said, how are we going to get the money?
Yeah, we'll feed all these people.
Feed these people. Yeah. And, he said, Philip answered him 200 pennyworth, and that's appendage 51, Roman numeral 1, number 4, and that equal to, a coin that was worth, in our numbers would have been 17 cents. And, and it said, that the money was just not sufficient for them, that every one of them may have a little to eat. And so let's do verse 8 and we'll close. And it said, one of his disciples, which was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said unto him, okay, let's go on another one. It says, there is a lad or a boy here which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes, full stop. It says, but what are they to among so many? And it said, and Jesus said, make the men sit down or to recline. Now there were much grass in this place, so the man sat down in number about 5,000. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed to the disciples and to them that were sat down. And likewise of the fishes, as much as they would. So, after he blessed that food, he set them down, and they ate the food. So we'll find out later how much was left over, I guess. That's as far as I got. But I made it pretty close to what the time that I had. Or I figured that I had left. But we'll leave it at that. And it won't be hard for me to pick up on the next study because I can start without any notes. I can just pick it up from there and do all of that. So we'll do it that way. And thank you for being with us. And I had fun going through that with in the book of John, where it was kind of like a trial somewhat. Because these people were trying to get the goods on Christ. They never let up on him after the 17th verse of chapter 5. They kind of dogged him on down and down and down until they got him before Pontius Pilate. And that was where, before the Bema seat, this was where he was tried. This is where they sent him out to be crucified, and he carried his cross with him. And they had somebody else helping him with his cross, but, and Pilate tried to get him to say that he was the Son of God. And his answer was, well, you say that I am. Because he never told Pilate that he was the Son of God. Because Pilate couldn't figure it out. Pilate's wife had figured it out already and told Pilate, said, you better not mess with this mess. You're getting into something now you don't know about. And certainly he didn't know that much about it. So, that's how they got him crucified. Because of the man at the pool, when he told him, arise, take your bed, go on.
Chain of events was already laid out there, wasn't it?
Absolutely. It was there, black and white. I couldn't see it.
Well, good study, Pop. Much appreciated.